Humboldt County, California, the most amazing place on earth. Home of some of the most interesting people you'll ever meet. 100% Humboldt is a local podcast honoring those movers and shakers and difference makers who often do it quietly and under the radar to make this the most amazing place on earth. We're getting curious and we're going to learn some new and exciting things and how people make this an amazing place to live. I'm your host, Scott Hammond. Let's learn more about our area and its people. 100% Humboldt. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to my new best friend, Terry Vroman, to the 100% Humboldt podcast. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Can I correct my name?
Yeah.
It's Vroman Little.
Vroman Little.
It is, yeah.
Thank you. You absolutely can correct your name. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How
I'm glad
you?
To be here. I'm really excited.
Everybody said you're going to be the amazing guest. I never lead with that. I've never said that.
All right.
So
I'll try.
Yeah. No, you're going to do great. Tell us how you got to Humboldt.
It's kind of a backstory from leaving Michigan as I had lived and gotten to high school in Michigan and had just had it with winters. I lasted one winter out of high school and I absolutely didn't want to go to college. And so I just up and left and made my way to California. And then I landed in California with $20 and a suitcase, which is not really a sustainable way to live in California.
No.
So the California Conservation Corps was hiring at the time. Mm-hmm. So I got a job in San Luis Obispo at the CCC Center there.
Nice. Down in SLO.
SLO. Yeah. Wait,
did you arrive in SLO when you came to California?
Eventually. I had taken a job selling magazine subscriptions door to door.
Oh, yeah,
with
that
this
one.
Pretty sketchy group. I mean, looking back on that, I would be horrified if any of my kids thought to do that. But I did. And I went from Michigan and made my way all the way west and got to Oregon, saw the ocean. And the next morning I thought, I cannot do this even one more day.
Right.
So.
Because Oregon's still cold. Like, sometimes, like, not quite like Michigan, but.
Yeah, but it was just the whole knocking on doors and telling the story, and the people most likely to give me money were the least likely, like, they should not be giving me money.
Right. But, yeah, I remember that. That was a thing.
Yeah.
Kirby Vacuums.
Right.
Magazine.
Yeah.
Back in Iowa, where it's super cold, we had the Fuller Brush Man, and we had a milkman, an ice cream man, Fuller Brush Man. Some other guy came by with something. Back in the day, so.
Yeah.
So CCC.
CCC, and that, I had worked in the Youth Conservation Corps in Michigan for a summer, and I hadn't really fully thought of myself as an outdoorsy person, but clearly I am. Mm-hmm. And so I got to work on a fish and game crew for a while, and then kind of a pivotal moment for my life was I applied to be on a backcountry trails crew. And so... I don't know why they took me because I was smoking cigarettes and like it was not in great shape, but they took me. And so I went to Kings Canyon National Park in 1982
and
worked on trail crew, lived out of a tent.
Sequoia out that way?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Tulare out that Visalia.
Yeah, just up out of Fresno. That was kind of the last town.
Yeah, my wife's from Porterville, south of there.
There you go.
She corrects me. She's not from there. She lived there for a time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good place to, another good place to be from.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was a back of the pack hiker, which I did not like because apparently I'm competitive sometimes too.
Oh.
So I quit smoking and got okay at trail work and just the living in the wilderness and the work ethic specifically in Kings Canyon National Park was amazing.
Yeah. How long were you up there in the woods?
It was a 6-month program, and so we were in the wilderness for a good 4 months, probably maybe 5.
Just living in camps.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, getting resupplied mostly by helicopters back in those days.
Wow.
That's really tapered off. We actually got flew in by a helicopter, which doesn't happen now. You hike,
but right?
Times were different.
You have to walk in. So, is that on Pacific Coast Crest Trail? Does it go through there?
It does. Yeah, and the John Muir Trail, both.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful park.
It is.
So what happened after that?
So after that, I wasn't quite done with the CCC, so I went ahead and applied to be an energy conservation worker, and that was some training, and then you get a green hat, and then I got to do like retrofitting of state buildings all over the state with, you know, insulation and weather stripping.
A little different from Kings.
Yeah, but it was, we had to go through an academic program. And so that's where it started to kind of hit that maybe I really should get an education. So,
Maybe a degree.
Maybe. I should go to college.
Did you go to Humboldt then, or did you go somewhere?
Well, that's a good story, too.
Sorry, Cal Poly.
I have to call it Humboldt still.
I do.
I might change. Yeah. So I applied at Humboldt, and they told me that I couldn't go there because my GPA wasn't high enough. And I said, what's a GPA? I don't know what that is. Because I didn't care in high school. I really did not like school.
Right.
It was kind of the old Midwestern, you know, corporal punishment, I think, was done in my high school at the time.
Wow.
But it was just, it wasn't my thing. So anyway, they sent me down to CR, and I spent 2 years there getting my grades up, and then, you know, went from a 1.8 to a 4.0. And then they took me.
And CR is a great school.
It was amazing. Yeah.
College of the Redwoods, located in south of Eureka, California, down toward Fortuna, here in the handy dandy Humboldt County map, 100% Humboldt County map.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. So you went to CR. Then what did you study at Humboldt?
Then I had thought at CR I was going to go into environmental studies of some kind, but that was just too heartbreaking and disappointing. It felt like everything was wrong. And so I shifted over at some point to education.
Oh.
Yeah. With the notion that I could have a bigger impact by working with children and helping them understand the natural world and, you know, everything else. But like having an impact at that level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I came up as an ocean major in wildlife and just discovered I was not particularly too bright. And so not too bright. And wound up as a recreation major.
There you go.
Liberal arts. So with five minors or something, whatever I wound up. But you know what? Solid education. Felt like I got my money's worth and ready to go right into, of course, got pregnant and radio sales. I was in sales for, still am, I guess, as a State Farm agent, but for many years in media. So,
what years were you at Humboldt?
78 through 82.
Okay,
I'm 100 years old now this year.
You don't look it.
Yeah,
you do not.
I feel pretty good actually. For 100. It was the sun in Maui that was helpful.
Yeah, because that really preserves your skin.
It really does. Preserves my soul. Anyway, so you graduated and then stayed here.
So and during, through College of the Redwoods and through my time at Humboldt, I went back to Kings Canyon National Park as a federal employee and worked on backcountry trails.
Huh.
It was a really nice balance because by then I was pretty fit. And so it was, I could keep up with everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I was small but strong. Mm-hmm. And so I could work all summer and there was nowhere to spend the money. So it all just went into my bank account. Perfect. And then I would come back in the fall and take more classes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you did that in the summer and then came back and.
Yeah. And I had to skip some, initially it was quarters and then semesters just to fit in a full season.
I remember the quarter system.
Yeah.
That was a great way to go. $67 a quarter plus books.
I don't remember.
It was cheap back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, CR was free when I was there.
It is a better deal.
Yeah.
That's even better.
But Humboldt, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so it took me way longer than 4 years to finish. Even while I was at CR, I didn't go all the time.
Gotcha.
But it was because I was working.
Well, you had a good gig down there.
I did,
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard work fun.
It was. And looking back on it now, because I'm a smaller person, I had to use tools to manage the big rocks, the rock bars, where other people who were bigger were more likely to just use brute force.
Yeah.
And that's great, except many of my bigger friends ended up with back problems at a super young age. And that was, I don't have that.
Yeah. So. Use the tools you had.
Right.
So did you get, you graduated, got married, stayed?
Yeah, not quite in that order. I was, I got pregnant with my oldest, who's now 34, when I was just, I think I had a semester to go.
Uh-huh.
And so she was born and I needed one, I had to take six more units after she was born. And so we walked through graduation one weekend and then had our wedding the next weekend. So,
busy June.
Yeah. So the family came and got to do all the fun things together.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that was with my former husband, so the dad of my two kids.
Gotcha. How old are your kids now?
The older two are 34 and 29.
Wow.
Yeah.
And are you grandma?
I'm a grandma. The 29-year-old has an 8-year-old son who I adore.
Cool. Yeah. And they're here local?
Those two are, yes.
Nice.
Yes. And then our oldest is up in Portland, which is accessible. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a day. Yeah, it's a long drive, but yeah. Yeah. So then you got into Montessori.
Yeah. Can I back up, though?
Please back away.
That's actually a better path. So while I was doing my teaching credentials, so once I had my daughter, my oldest, I finished up those last few credits and then took a year just to be a mom and then went back to get my teaching credential. And at that point, my daughter was two-ish. And my master teachers were at Alice Burney School. That's where I did my student teaching. Michelle Leftridge at the time, and Mary Scott. Mary Scott's a county school board member.
I remember those names. Yeah,
amazing people.
Was Alice Burney the one that's not Jacobs? It's
it was next to Jacobs. I mean, Jacobs is scraped now, but
yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So Michelle, who has a daughter very close in age to my daughter, said, "Oh, you need to send Kelsey to Montessori preschool." And I said, "Well, okay." Look, I knew about Montessori, but I didn't really understand it. And so it's having sent her there and seeing what Montessori education was about as a new teacher. It just kind of...
Tell us about Maria Montessori. What's it all about?
Oh, my gosh.
Some people will know, but many of us don't know the deets.
Yeah, and it's been fun over the years that people have asked, well, what religion is that? Well, it's not a religion. It's just a person. Maria Montessori was born in Italy at a time when the options for women were to stay home and have a baby or possibly be a teacher. And that was like as far as you could go in education. And Maria Montessori wanted to be a doctor.
Wow.
And you read different stories, but she was very convincing. And I think her mom was quite an advocate. Mm-hmm. And there's, word that possibly the Pope intervened. But she,
early 1900s?
Yeah, she was born in... oh, dear. Well, she died in 1952. So I think she was born in 1859.
Okay. Wow.
Something like that. I should know those dates, but I don't in this moment.
So she lived a long life.
She did. Yeah. Very just brilliant life. Hmm. So she initially got picked on in medical school. It was just a whole different era. Women were not supposed to work on cadavers next to men. So, the men would get to do that work in the daytime and she'd have to go downstairs in the dark at night and do her studies by herself.
With dead people.
Yeah. Well, just their bodies.
It's just their shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. The earth, Pastor Jim calls that your earth suit.
There.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, that kind of stick-to-itiveness, amazing. So it didn't take too long before people started to understand what she was and how amazing she was. And so the picking on her tapered away. Mm-hmm. She actually got to give a speech at graduation.
Oh, wow.
And she was the first place she went was at in those days, it was called an insane asylum or some other, it's derogatory now, but just a facility for children with pretty severe developmental disabilities.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, I don't know why, because. So she started observing the children because her background was science and just watching what they were doing and hearing all the people saying, well, these kids are terrible. They're playing with crumbs on the floor. And she said, well, there's nothing there for them to work with except for spilled food.
Right.
So they had nothing. They had no enrichment at all. It was like an asylum.
Huh.
So she got busy and did research and went back for more education. And
brilliant.
That's kind of where her whole approach to teaching and learning started, was there.
Interesting. So from nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, but imagine a brilliant, brilliant person.
Watching and learning and going, well, maybe there's... So what's the premise of Montessori education?
There's a few tenets that... I mean, there's all kinds of amazing materials that some she developed from scratch. Others she made good use of the science and... materials that were already out in the world. So some of her stuff came from other brilliant people at the time, especially the math materials. Anyway, hands-on learning, because especially young children, they're like, and grown-ups too, there's a lot of sensorial information you can get. So really visual and hands-on materials, freedom within limits, which is brilliant. I mean, it works in any program mm-hmm. where you're free to make choices that you can, you know, if you're using the materials correctly, mm-hmm. you're allowing other people to work.
Love it.
And then if you can't use those correctly, that's where the limits are come. And if you can't limit yourself, then, you know, I, as your educator, will step in and help you and set some limits mm-hmm. until you're ready to push again. Mm-hmm. So it's also, there's 3-year age cycles in a traditional Montessori classroom, which allows for that kind of span of developmental progress, because mm-hmm. not every child in first grade on day one can do these 10 things.
Right.
You know, some of them did them a year ago, some of mm-hmm. them it's coming. So having that choice of materials and a span of materials. And then for the teachers, it's pretty great because you only change out 1/3 of your class every year. And so there's a more sustained culture in the room. So the older children are helping model for the younger ones.
What are the 3-year increments?
Typically, it would be like in a preschool, it would go through kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So kind of 2.5 to 3-year-olds all the way through about 6. And mm-hmm. then first, second, third together, 4th, 5th, 6th. And then the adolescent program. Mm-hmm. There's not many models of that. Like, even our program can't quite pull that off, because ideally there would be a farm and the kids would go out and work on the farm.
Because like, this has an ag component to it, though.
Especially at the adolescent and into high school years, because that's such a hard time for any kid, whether they've got everything they want, if they're struggling. Like, it's just, their bodies are changing so much.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So having them, like, do work that they could, like, have a farm stand, mm-hmm. have their hands in the dirt, be outside, use their bodies.
Perfect. Watch nature do its thing.
Yeah. So there's are some amazing models. There's one in Hershey, Ohio, where we've sent some teachers for their training.
So your job and title is what at the local school?
Well, that's where it gets tricky. So right now, my main title is I'm the school founder, which mm-hmm. doesn't mean I founded it on my own, but mm-hmm. It was my brilliant idea.
That's a pretty nice title.
I like it.
I founded podcasting in Eureka. Yeah. No, that's Nick. Sorry. I founded the Hammond Family Ranch. Mm. I like that.
Yeah. So
you were part of the start.
I was, yeah. And I was, so backing up to my kids, my son came along 5 years later and he went to the same Montessori preschool. And it was just clear, like, he's a very bright person, as is my older daughter, but he's just wired differently. And it was looking like that traditional education was not going to be so easy for him. My older child made the leap okay. So I got busy and went back to school and started Montessori training with the vision of opening an elementary program here locally.
Back to school meaning Humboldt?
No, not right away. I went down to San Luis Obispo area, mm-hmm. ironically, because there was a kind of a hybrid program where I could do a lot of the studying in the school year time and then go down for intensive hands-on learning in the summers. So I did that through kind of 4 summers to get both levels that I wanted, the preschool level.
So get a private school, private Montessori training center, or was it through SLO?
It's Cal Poly? Private, and it was kind of like you could get extended ed through UC Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. But it's a standalone program mm-hmm. supported by a couple of local Montessori
Love that
schools.
Area. That's such a cool area. Yeah, we're going down soon to Paso or Tascadero or somewhere anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, Joni's sister has a restaurant in Slow.
Oh.
Yeah.
We should talk about that later.
Yeah. Pizza Republic. Hey, Lisa.
Hey.
Shout out to Lisa.
Yay.
Tim. What a great area. So you came back then and started the school?
So that would have been so easy, but it mm-hmm. was really hard to get anything off the ground. Initially, mm-hmm. my husband and I thought, oh, well, we'll make it a private program. And that just was not, it's just not going to happen. And I'm mm-hmm. really glad it didn't mm-hmm. because that would have set us up to just have families that could pay to go, get to go. And that was not ever really Montessori's model. Like, she started with inner city slum kids. That was her
first
classroom.
For everybody. Come one, come
all. Yeah. So I approached Eureka City Schools. And at the time, Jim Scott was a superintendent. Mm. And he got it. He understood what the vision was and being able to offer that with Eureka City Schools. So that's where I started. I had a small standalone classroom at Grant Elementary.
That was Montessori specific.
Yes.
That's rad, under the public school system.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and that lasted 4 years.
Is that done much? Do they do that much?
It's becoming more common, but the more likely scenario is what we are now, which is an independent charter school.
So you're funded through the state, but as a separate
entity. Yes. And so we're under the umbrella of Arcata School District because of where our first site ended
up. So do you have access to resources through, can kids play sports, for instance, or if they wanted to?
Yeah, we do compete in with other schools in sports. And like, there's no way our high school students are ever going to be able to compete against
Eureka. No.
But what we did for the first time ever, which is pretty amazing, shout out to College of the Redwoods, we fielded a basketball team, and there's a whole program for small school basketball teams.
All right.
And so, yeah, they got to play basketball against
league.
Other little schools. Yeah.
That's cool.
They came in fourth out of six at the tournament.
Hey, come on. Yeah. Hey, they're rocking it.
Yeah, and there were kids that were out there that had never played basketball before, along with some really skilled kids who had kind of lost steam in the whole super competitive piece. So it's really, really magical to watch.
That's cool. So as the founder, do you come and teach? Do you show up?
So I had been the first through third grade classroom teacher. That was my sweet spot. And I had done that with Grant Elementary for 4 years. And then it was declining enrollment in the district. And Jim Scott had retired. And the new forces there just didn't really appreciate or whatever. So I was at a board meeting saying, are we going to get to be here next year? Because if not, I need to know now.
Right.
And so the board just sat silently, which was the kindest thing they could have done, really. And so I walked out of that meeting thinking, it's done. And then a bunch of parents followed and said, okay, well, what do we do now?
Huh.
So I thought, oh, we're not done. We're just moving on.
We're just moving. Just transitioning.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of a long, drawn-out story, but we, Mattole Valley Charter School took us under their wing, and we were able to get a school site in Cooper Gulch, straight across from where Mistwood Montessori is.
Okay.
It's a city-owned building.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing for a small program that we were at the time.
Right.
So we had 3 years there.
Huh.
Loved it.
Is that over by the Frisbee Golf Course?
Yeah, yeah.
It's right over here. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it.
It's right there.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
cool. So what's cool about Montessori? What have you seen the fruit of the kids that come through it?
Well, one thing I have to say is that Montessori, the approach to Montessori teaching and learning, so the freedom within limits, follow the child, which means you're not going to follow them around with like a little helicopter or a snowplow, but you're observing, taking note of what the children are interested in, and then supporting what they want to learn in that moment with the materials on hand. So, but other like really subtle things are supporting. There's a lot of psychology about education that Montessori understood so far back.
Yeah.
So just the phrasing of what you do, not making it, oh, I'm so proud of you. Like, oh my gosh, look how hard you worked on that. Like those basic things to empower the children.
I love it. Yeah. So we homeschooled most of our 9 kids.
Yeah.
Not all of them. Joni finally fired the last two. Threw in the towel and said, get out of here.
Yeah. That's a lot
of
kids.
Going to a charter school. Actually, Worthington right around the corner.
Aw.
And they did fine. They got through. But the net is, she learned early on the whole unlearning model, which is feed them what they love, man.
Yeah.
Let them do what they like within parameters.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Kalia was very artsy and hands-on and kinetic and creative. And Jesse, we would just go get him a big box of books at McKinleyville Library. I mean, the big ones. And Joy loved to see him coming. The librarian, she was amazing. She'd go, yeah, well, he could go over the limit. That's fine. Take 2 boxes today. And so just feeding those gifts. And funny, we don't do that as much in the old model.
No. Yeah. Well, the old model was a factory. I can't say for sure, but I think my elementary classroom desks were bolted to the floor in straight rows because a lot of that, that whole industrial approach to education. Well, that was actually Indiana. We moved to Indiana for a while.
Bolted to the floor.
Well, yeah, because it was kind of based on the factory model, and factories were all pinned down, lined up.
Yeah.
Everybody does the same thing, which can work really well for a lot of kids, but not every kid.
So. Some of us got through it, and I came to Humboldt. It was very creative. We had a program called Cluster, which was no tests, no grades, show up, get 16 units in the quarter system, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was all interdisciplinary, and you did have to show up, you did have to journal, you did have to do your darn work and be present. But the no grade thing was really kind of hard on folks. People were so used to the factory.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
And getting there, you check the boxes and you get through. And it's like, this was a really nicely different program, which was really well-rounded, made me hunger to learn things.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like recreation administration. Kids go, you majored in recess? I go, kinda.
Yeah.
Don't mess
with it. Come on outside, man.
Yeah, come on outside. Let's go for a hike.
Yeah.
So, no, that's wonderful. So I appreciate that because, you know, coming from that homeschool background, there's such a big homeschool and charter school community here.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that stuff's so important. So let's shift over to your, I want to ask about COVID and what that did to the school and kids and kind of, and then transition to your running and the Humboldt Bay Marathon and stuff.
Great. Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple of pieces I still have to fill in. When my son was born, his dad, the dad of my two older children, and I split up actually before Huxley was even born. So that was a really tough time for all of us.
Sure.
So I ended up needing to work very part-time for a reasonable amount of money. And so a job came open to teach inside the Humboldt County Jail.
Oh, wow.
And that's what I did. I call it my 7 years hard time. Because it was hard. It was...
Men, women, both?
Yes. All categories of jumpsuits. So like violent murderers, you know, sexual predators, everybody who was cleared to be educated. I worked with all of them.
So mostly classroom setting or...
Yeah. And it was early enough where it was still the old jail model. The new jail was being built while I was teaching there. So I got to kind of transition over. Mm-hmm. But my point was that while I was doing some of my Montessori education while I was still teaching in the jail and was able to implement some of those approaches. Yeah, without ever saying that to anyone.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that it was heartbreaking and also really inspiring to see people pull it together. And then devastating because many people were still in the addiction cycle and just, you know, I'd see repeats come in and really young people who did really horrendous things. And I still, like, that's been, I haven't worked there in 20 years, but every once in a while, somebody will recognize me out in the community and say, oh, I got my GED when I was working with you. And
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Jill's a... Yeah, I've done jail ministry, and it's a mix. Yeah,
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 yeah.
Tough.
So,
what did COVID do to education and kids?
Oh my goodness! Well, by the time COVID came, like I had already been out of the classroom for a while before COVID. So I, like, we were, our family was living through it. I was, you know, seeing how the school was doing and helping. It was rough. It was super rough. Our youngest at home, who's now almost 18, she was an adolescent. So any child, though, going from a hands-on learning environment or whatever, even in traditional education, from that to being home and facing a screen, you know, asking that of children was a lot. And then asking that of families was super hard to
Let's Zoom life for the rest of 3 years.
Yeah. So, I don't think she'll be mad, but we got a phone call from our daughter whose parent or her teacher was like, I don't know if she's really paying attention because she's at the screen, but kind of looking sideways and smiling. We busted her. She was just watching little cute videos on the side while she was supposed to be paying attention.
Like
class.
All the kids were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I was. Like I still do.
Right?
Don't tell anybody in my Zoom class. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out over time. But I think the kind of cool thing is that nobody got out unscathed. Like everybody's education got jammed up. So there's this whole generation of students who have had to weather that and make the best.
Went and got our daughter from Chico State, Michaela, and brought her home from the dorms. And she stayed there and graduated 2 months later from home.
Hey.
Never went back to Chico.
Wow.
Yeah, just all Zoom and distance learning. So, yeah, I think there's, I think it's just kind of coming out now how people have survived and thrived and not. And
I work with really young children now. So my job title, it's through Humboldt First Five. And so I'm a 0 to 5 year old playgroup leader.
Okay.
And so it's children that are 0 to 5. They come in with some kind of adult. So either a parent, grandparent, babysitter. And those, like the children who are now turning 4, 5, 6, they were super isolated in that developmental phase.
Wow.
So a lot of them, the parents have been saying, they never had the chance to learn how to share when they were tiny.
Right.
And so now that's a thing that, you know, it's workable, but it's a thing that was skipped.
You have to relearn or unlearn some things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think our 19-year-old, he suffered greatly, came through with a really good guitar skill because he was
there
on YouTube all the time. And,
and
he could bench 450 pounds, which is in America a lot of weight.
It is.
In the world. It's NFL. It's more than NFL.
More than two people.
Yeah. Oh, it's 4 or 5 plates on both. He's hardcore.
Wow.
And ate a lot of protein.
Yeah.
And, but socially, I think.
It's tough.
He is catching up. Like you said, the kids are, we're resilient.
Yeah.
You implied it, you didn't say it, but.
Yeah.
And then we could relearn and unlearn and go forward. But kind of a tough setback.
It was.
And even for adults, lots of adult friends are right now, I think, I'm just seeing some hangover, PTSD, anxiety, depression.
Yeah.
Abuse of whatever, like addiction cycles.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know that many people are immune from all of that. So,
I agree. It doesn't matter what your background is.
All that and an environment of separation and political dissension and insanity.
Yeah.
Other than that, we're doing great. So,
Well, it's, and you never know who is going to pull through better than you think. And those people that you think are going to be fine when really they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting you'd say that because I found that in a church setting, the people that I thought were really cool, totally like great people, they're, as soon as there's crisis, they're out of here, man.
Yeah.
They check out and it's like, I love you, but I'm gone. And then the people that I thought were kind of, just not negative, just ambivalent, turned out to be the amazing people during a crisis.
Yeah.
Or a down cycle or what, a problem or trouble. And it's funny how that works. The people that came and saw me after my hip surgery were not the people that I thought were going to come by to say hi, to bring a sandwich, to bring some strawberries, to, you know, whatever.
To make you walk,
to inspire you to get off your couch and start walking on those hips. So speaking of walking.
Yes. Okay.
So are you the founder of the Humboldt Bay Marathon?
Rich Baker and I were the original directors, so co-founder is what I like to say, or co-director.
Who's Rich?
Rich Baker is, he's a local legend himself. Mm-hmm. So I met him because his two younger daughters came to our school.
Oh, okay.
And they had gone through the Montessori preschool as well. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of an off and on runner, but had just decided somewhere in there to get busy running.
Commit.
Yeah. And our daughters were also singing together. I guess that's how we got to spend more time while they were at chorus practice. We were chatting it up. And I just started talking about how amazing it would be if we could have a marathon that goes all the way around Humboldt Bay.
Yeah.
Like that just, oh.
Oh, we have the bay right here. That's so amazing.
Well, no, we don't. We got a piece. Oh, we do. Sorry.
If we're at Arcata, is that where it starts, on the plaza?
It starts in Eureka.
Okay.
And
do you go all the way around the bay?
The first couple years it did. Mm-hmm. All the way around and grabbed some mileage out in the Arcata Bottoms.
That's right. So you come up and then back around Manila, Samoa.
Yeah. And over the bridges.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say cuss words in here?
Sure.
Okay. People, we're not using those bridges for the last few years, but people call them the dam bridges.
Huh.
Because they come in the last several miles, which for a marathon is grim timing to have any kind of a hill.
And they're little hills. Yeah.
Damn
bridges.
Yeah.
So they're really coming
back. We are going to come back. Yeah. I'm sure people have
talk.
All kinds of words, but so.
So that was the end of the race.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had trained running around Humboldt Bay a few times with some, like my friend Jesse Hunt and my friend Susie Seaman, that we had trained up to run Santa Rosa Marathon together.
Okay.
So that, like, we had done some of our long runs around the Bay, and that was kind of what got me thinking about it some years before.
Wow.
Yeah. So Rich Baker said, yes, let's do it. And so we worked together pretty tightly for the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So the initial year was 2015.
Mm.
So we're on, this will be our ninth running this coming year.
Wow, already.
We skipped a year due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really an annual. We can't ever quite claim that. We just call it the whatever running.
Right.
So this will be the ninth.
And what's the date this year?
So it's Sunday, August 11. It's always the second Sunday in August.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're in town. I think Joni's signing up, going for it.
Yeah, she's run it quite
She got green lighted yesterday from the doctor.
Yay!
So she's
good.
She's going for it.
Rumor has Grasshopper Peak might be in her.
Could be. Yeah, actually, yeah. We're going to her sister's, so we're gonna.
Okay.
There's it's a kerfuffle.
So I have to tell you a few more things about the marathon.
Please.
Because there had been a marathon around Humboldt Bay back in the mid-70s. I've got some really cryptic paperwork about that. And I think it went for two or three years. I think registration was $5. There's no T-shirt involved. The permitting was zero.
They just ran it.
Yeah.
Who did that? Like the jogging shop? And
yeah, I almost... Oh. I wish I had looked that back up because I can't hold that kind of.
That was a strong running community then. I mean, they were hardcore Humboldt people.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's still like people, there's hardcore runners here now.
Oh, sure.
They've maybe diversified a little, a lot more trail runners.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we were not the originators of it. And but we've kept it going with a lot of support from local people, local businesses, volunteers. And last year, we helped a man qualify for the Olympic trials.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
He set a new course record that's going to be really tricky to beat unless somebody else is trying to qualify. His name is Mason Searle from Colorado. And he brought a friend with him who had already qualified and was just going to try to re-qualify or run it. Yeah, it was amazing. So he ran 2:17:46.
That's really fast.
Smoking. Yeah.
That's super fast.
So part of why they picked us is that we're sea level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very flat course. It's a double out and back right now for this year. And so there's a lot of great things about that. You know the course,
right.
You know the turns.
Except for those damn bridges.
Yeah. Well, those are not part of it right now. Okay. So the going around the bay was really, really expensive. And we couldn't charge enough to really make up for that. So eventually we had to back away from that and kind of regroup.
Okay.
Once those final 4 miles along Highway 101 are put in as trail.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah. So all indications are that by next year.
That'd be cool.
By 2025, our 10th running, we can make it sustainable and financially viable to go back around the bay. Because that's
perfect.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So what's this year's route?
So the start and finish is at the Mattaquette Plaza, so the foot of C Street. Mm-hmm. And then the marathon and the half do the same thing, although the marathon gets to do the half twice. So they go up the waterfront trail all the way up to the Tid Street. They do a little loop all the way down.
Okay.
And then come back to the foot of C Street.
Did they go all the way down to Elk River and back?
We haven't because that just got added after we certified our course a couple of years ago. And there's some time and expense to recertify.
Oh, okay.
So we're looking at that for this year, whether we can grab that. Because that's gorgeous down there.
Oh, yeah.
And really flat.
And really, really flat.
Yeah.
And newly paved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a nice turnaround where we could have an aid station down there. So, yeah. Marlene Allen is the person to get your course certified. So we've got ideas in the hopper.
And that's a big thing. The certification is a big deal, right?
It is. Yeah. So it's with the USATF. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me to explain what that is right now. Mm-hmm. So, but that's what makes you a Boston qualifying race is if you get certified, and then to qualify people for the Olympics, you also have to get sanctioned, which requires some more things and a little more money.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So how do we, let's do the shout out. How do we, enroll in the race if we want.
You could go to
right now.
HumboldtBayMarathon.com and find the link to the webpage or the registration there. It's through Race Roster, which a lot of races use.
Race Roster.
Yeah.
Only runners would kind of know that.
Yeah.
Well, probably, yeah. Many.
So I have to back up, though, and explain a little another detail about sure. the race. So the reason I'm not teaching in the classroom anymore is that I was running with these three or two friends mm-hmm. that we had actually, we did the Santa Rosa Marathon. All three of us qualified for wow. the Boston Marathon at that wow. race. Yeah, that was 2011. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how phenomenal that was, that how many people can't ever get there.
It's a big thing.
Yeah. So I have to brag. I qualified with 15 minutes to spare.
Whoa.
I know.
Did
you? Yeah, I look back in that.
Did you go race Boston then?
We did. Yeah. So Susie decided to not go to Boston. Her children were younger than Jesse's and mine. And she just decided that wasn't going to be a thing for her that year. So Jesse and I went and ran the 2012 Boston Marathon.
How cool.
No, it was hot. It was painfully really? Really? Hot. They were saying, if you don't start the race, you can just come back next year and you don't have to requalify. It was wow. 79 in the shade at
oh,
the start.
No. Wow.
For Humboldt people, that
early.
Was grim.
You're
yeah.
dying, yeah.
Yeah. So we just regrouped and just decided we're going to run it and we're going to finish without needing help at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So we just had a great time, got lots of high fives, took treats from kids on the sides.
Sure.
And, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then soon after that, we were out, I guess it was that September. So I just turned 50 in early September of 2012. And mm-hmm. We were out running one morning and we were hit intentionally by, mm-hmm. I just kind of vacillate between sociopath and psychopath, but it was a really intentional thing.
Mm-hmm.
Susie was killed at the scene, as was Jesse's mm-hmm. dog, and Jesse and I were just grimly injured.
Wow.
And so that was 2012. The community stepped in so many ways. There are things I'm sure that I still don't know today, but the running community, the school communities,
yeah,
people who didn't know us, the Bay Area. So that was really heartwarming. And I didn't know much to begin with because along with everything else, I had a brain injury. So I was kind of...
So for the record, this guy committed crimes up in the mountains and that...
He did. He had already murdered right? somebody else up in Hoopa.
And he came back down and he...
Took a car, yeah.
And he turned around and came after everybody, right? Is that kind of how
what I... was... Yeah, like, we don't remember, mm-hmm. But he, like from all the evidence, he drove past us, turned around and came back and drove through the back of us.
It was a doubling back, wow.
Yeah, and then turned around again to go wherever he was planning to go and get rid of the car.
Huh.
Yeah.
But somebody saw it and came to the rescue.
Somebody, there was a postal worker who was on her way to work, who lived out on Old Arcata Road
wow.
and saw the vehicle turning around, but didn't think anything of it, thought it was a farmer because it was early in the morning. It was still dark.
Yeah, you guys are running early.
Yeah, with all the right stuff. We had the headlights, the reflecty stuff. Even
sure.
the dog had a little light up collar on the correct side of the road, on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she thought it was just a farm vehicle out early and didn't think a thing of it. So just came along and then saw the car go around a bunch of our debris in the road. And so she was going to go along and around too and looked over and realized that's a person.
Right.
So she stopped her car, parked it across the road to make sure the person, that was Jesse, was safe,
mm-hmm.
Called for help. And then the next person on the scene was an Arcata police officer on his way to work.
Whoa.
What are the odds?
What are the chances? Yeah.
And then soon after that, a CHP investigator coming home from the gym. So there was just help came quickly, which was good.
And he was arrested that day, right?
Yeah. They found the vehicle later and just it's kind of.
Huh.
I don't need to tell all that story. But yes, he was arrested later. There's no gift about it, but it took a long time for the trial to come about. And with that time, I was able to like recover a lot of what I could get back mm-hmm. and kind of think things through and be able to go to the trial with a clearer head than if it had happened right away.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What a thing to go through, ordeal.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would... Gosh, forgiveness, all that stuff. How do you move through all that? I guess you have.
Well, no.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever will. I don't think anyone can. But there's
to lose somebody,
a lot. Like I went about wanting to like own all the information, which is not what everybody needs, but I had to look at all the files, look at all the pictures. I needed to just own the story. I had to ask my husband many times, like, okay, so what did I do in the emergency room? I don't remember. Like, So that was my approach to recovery. Not that I was thinking, oh, I should do this. That's just what I did.
The process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jessie doing okay?
She has recovered a lot too. Neither one of us could get everything back. And that's her story to tell.
Is she running?
She is. Yeah.
Is she good?
Yeah. We actually did a race together with another friend who could have easily been with us that morning and just wasn't. Mm-hmm. She's a professor down at Sac State. So we went and did a race over in Reading, a relay, and we took first place in our age group.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, we're back running. We kind of, like, we don't run together very much anymore. Mm-hmm. One thing, Jessie's younger and she got a lot of her speed back. I'm older and, you know, I'm speedy enough. But anyway, we just kind of, you know, regrouped and pointed ourselves in the direction that made
Joni's sense. Working on her speed. Hi, hon.
Yeah.
She's
go, Joni.
Yeah.
Go, Joni.
She'll get it back.
Yeah. So just to wrap that in. So, having a friend be killed can't really be a reason to put a race on.
Right.
So it wasn't, but yet also it was a way, like putting Humboldt Bay Marathon together was a way to honor Susie's memory and everything about running and everybody else who cared about running and what happened. And so the first couple of years when it went around the bay, it went out Old Arcata Road and we didn't tell people, but our local friends knew that the course went right past the hit and run site.
Wow.
And some of our really close friends ran the aid station right there, just as a not silent, but you know.
Yeah.
An honoring. And we still go out there every year and redecorate the little memorial plaque that's there. You wouldn't know it was there unless you stopped to look at it.
Yeah. Anyway.
So now there's a heart that somebody at Susie's children's school had drawn, and it's a heart shape that has Susie's initials in it. Mm-hmm. And that has been woven into every piece of marathon gear that we do. It's in the artwork. It's
Sarah's designed it in the artwork too.
Yeah.
Is she doing the artwork this year?
Yes. Oh, she'll do it until she says no, because I'm never going to not have Sarah.
Sarah Starr,
yay,
shout out to the artist.
We love you, yeah.
Yeah, no, she's there. They become our good friends, her and Peter.
I've heard.
They're just special to us.
Yeah.
So, hey, that part of our show where I pull out the bell.
Okay.
And I ring the bell into the mic. That should be
there
crazy. I've never done this.
Ooh.
Ooh, dude, that's loud.
It resonates.
So this is the quiz where you might earn Dick Taylor.
That bag is empty, man.
Well, you don't know that. It could be full. There's a lighter. There's a shot glass over there. Those belong to Nick. Here's the quiz. Ready?
Okay.
Favorite burger at Humboldt. Go.
Ooh. Oh, no. We were in Chico and had such a good burger recently. I can't think of where it is. Oh, no. Is it always the burger question? Can we loop back to that?
We'll
I get
back.
Kind of excited under pressure.
Question number two.
Okay.
Favorite coffee place?
Oh, Old Town Coffee and Chocolates.
Okay, good. Number three. Favorite chocolate?
Dick Taylor, Madagascar.
Oh, wow. That's fine.
Ironic because my husband and I honeymooned in Belize and we like that just fine, but Madagascar, that's the winner, Dick Taylor.
It's kind of creamier. It's good. I like that one. We just finished a Madagascar bar. What's your favorite running trail?
My favorite is the McKay Community Forest, all the way out to the end and back. It's about 11 miles round trip.
That's a good run.
It's not too hilly, which is what I like. Yeah.
Okay. Ding. You can go anywhere you want for dinner. Mm-hmm. Where do you go?
Brick and Fire.
Brick and Fire. Ooh, good choice.
Yeah.
And last question.
The burger.
Your favorite beach in Humboldt County.
Oh, okay. I think it's called College Cove. It's on the way out to Elk's Head. You drop down
it's
in
College
there.
Cove, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's, we take our dogs there early in the morning once in a while when nobody's there.
I've never been down. I worked as a rec leader in Trinidad, but we never, I got to go.
Okay.
What's a dune beach, right? Clothing optional. Sorry to dude. Back
in
the day.
I guess so. We're never there when it's warm enough to see.
No. And usually the people that go nude beaches just shouldn't.
I think anyone. anyone can go, man. If you don't
can,
want to
if you
see
want
it,
to go, dude, go yeah. for it. But you probably, yeah, some people, anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have to tell you why that's my favorite beach is because my husband and I got married on Elk's Head 25 plus years ago.
Was it windy?
Not too bad.
It could really blow there.
We lucked out. Yeah, it was early October, which is kind of a sweet spot for weather.
Like all the way out at the end where that archway thing is?
Down and then on the big flat area.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a ways to go out to.
It is. Yeah, we've kind of forgot to tell people it was a bit of a walk.
It's a little bit of a
folks in heels were not too happy.
I was going to say, it can be muddy in the winter a little too. That's funny. Well, cool. So my question for you, and I save this for last for someone, is who are you and what do you want? That was Joni's runner father, Tom's favorite questions. He was
a
recovery guy and had all these pithy sayings that were really kind of fun. But if you could answer who are you, Terry, and what do you want? We'd love to hear that. Who's Terry?
I am a mom and a wife and a granny. Mm. I am tenacious and vicious. Vicious is my trail name.
Is that the competitive thing? That kind of vicious?
Well, it was when I was working trails, and because I'm a smallish person, again, it was just kind of ironic that I could be vicious. So
good.
It fits, yeah. And I can be vicious if you mess with me in the wrong place. No,
vicious comes in all
sizes.
Especially
now, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So I'm also a runner. I love wild swimming out in the bay and the lagoons, not the ocean.
Wait, heart stop. What is a wild swim?
You swim in open water.
Just go swim.
Yeah.
Okay.
So wetsuit, no wetsuit. Mm-hmm. Swimsuits, yes, usually. Yeah, so, and I am a get after it. Like part of after I was injured, one of my things is I wanted to get back into Kings Canyon National Park that following summer and be able to backpack in. And it was really excruciating. Wow. So I believe in wilderness as a route to reclaiming yourself, to recovering from pretty much anything that's wrecked you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm optimistic about our future. I believe in small children and their value.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enough?
That's great. Yeah.
Okay.
And so what would you like to see happen? What do you want?
I want for Humboldt the resources for small children and other people who to be able to have their needs met, not spoiled, like accountability, the freedom within limits, to be able to thrive, to support the people supporting them with a living wage. And I want Humboldt to be sustainable for everyone.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. So when we come to your funeral and see your tombstone, maybe at the same event.
Have to find my ashes somewhere.
What's your legacy? What's your funeral? What's your message? What's your tombstone going to say? Or what would you like it to say?
I want it to say that I was a good mother to all my children. I have two that I barely spoke of today. Anyway, two younger children that we adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four of us.
How old are they, by the way?
Wanda is 20. She's a junior down at UC Santa Cruz.
Oh, that's
right. And then Helen is turning 18 really soon, and she's a junior at Redwood Coast Montessori High School.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So good mother, tenacious partner. Educator.
Mm-hmm.
Advocate for children and their rights to a good life.
Amen. Yeah, good stuff.
Thank you.
I love it. Yeah. Let's do a shout out for the marathon one more time. What's the website?
Woohoo, HumboldtBayMarathon.com. There's a half marathon, which is half of a full. It's just halfway there.
Yeah.
And then the full marathon.
And it's not terribly expensive like some are. That I remember yours as being very affordable.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's... We want it to be. We also have a program for high school runners. If they want to do the half marathon, there's, I think it's $25 or $30. I should know that too, but I don't.
Yeah.
I set the prices wide.
Somewhere in there.
So it's accessible. And part of that is because it's a small local race and a lot of local folks help. And we always need more help. So if you want to volunteer.
So they could call or go to the website and contact somebody and come on out.
Yeah.
That's cool. Are you going to do booths at the finish line again?
Yes.
Support booths.
Yeah. And then food trucks are welcome.
Oh, wow.
Oh, and gosh, Terry, one of our major supporters is Eureka Main Street. So they, right. They're kind of our finish line supporters. Mm-hmm. And then the Finish Arch, which was new last year. So fabulous.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that's from,
Lou Hawks, did they?
No,
did somebody make one for you?
They got one. Pivotal Connections. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I get it so excited.
Pivotal Connections.
Yeah. So they're a physical therapy practice on the plaza in Arcata.
And a Fish Archway is pretty important stuff for a race.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so really cool.
And then they bring their A game with support too.
Nice. And how can we support Montessori and Humboldt?
You can pay attention to what's going on with Redwood Coast Montessori specifically. Mm-hmm. We're the only public Montessori program. Mm-hmm. And then donate. You mm-hmm. could volunteer at the school. Mm-hmm.
So there are private Montessori programs locally?
Yes.
As well?
Yeah, there is one. I don't know what grades they go through mm-hmm. now because they've shifted a little bit. And then there's at least two preschools, and those are also private.
Wow, okay.
Which doesn't, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just... Sure.
Different model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, actually, you wouldn't even know if you walk in, except mm-hmm. that people have to pay.
Yeah.
You have to pay.
Smaller scale.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. Parting shots, anything we missed?
I love my husband so much.
What is his name? I don't think I've
Brian
seen him.
Little, yeah.
Brian. Hey, Brian,
so
what's up?
He's the school director of Redwood Coast Montessori. Mm-hmm. We had the plan that even before I was injured, he was going to come in and be the director. I had to sort of be the director and a teacher in the beginning, and that was not ever my goal. I just wanted to teach. So he stepped in big time when I had to just disappear. And so, yeah, Brian Little, the doer of many things, woodworker.
Brian Little, welder, amazing man.
Woo-hoo. Okay.
That's cool. All right. Shout out to Brian. Hey, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Scott.
100% Humboldt. Thank you, Terry.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening today to 100% Humboldt. Reach back to us, follow us, share us. And thanks again to our guest. This is Scott Hammond. Come back next time and learn what it is to be 100% Humboldt.